Chapter 86. Misgiving they must have changed their plans and taken some other route. But at length the roar of voices was heard in the neighboring fields, and soon afterwards they came thronging past in a great body. However, they were not all, nor nearly all, in one body, but were, as he soon found, divided into four parties, each of which stopped before the house to give three cheers, and then went on, the leaders crying out in what direction they were going, and calling on the spectators to join them. The first detachment, carrying, by way of banners, some relics of the havoc they had made in Moorfields, proclaimed that they were on their way to Chelsea, whence they would return in the same order, to make of the spoil they bore, a great bonfire, near at hand. The second gave out, that they were bound for Wapping, to destroy a chapel. The third, that their place of destination was East Smithfield, and their object the same. All this was done in broad, bright, summer day. Gay carriages and chairs stopped to let them pass, or turned back to avoid them. People on foot stood aside in doorways, or perhaps knocked and begged permission to stand at a window, or in the hall, until the rioters had passed. But nobody interfered with them, and when they had gone by, everything went on as usual. There still remained the fourth body, and for that the secretary looked with a most intense eagerness. At last it came up. It was numerous, and composed of picked men, for as he gazed down among them, he recognized many upturned faces which he knew well, those of Simon Tappertit, Hugh, and Dennis in the front, of course. They halted and cheered, as the others had done, but when they moved again, they did not, like them, proclaim what design they had. Hugh merely raised his hat upon the bludgeon he carried, and glancing at a spectator on the opposite side of the way, was gone. Gashford followed the direction of his glance instinctively, and saw, standing on the pavement, and wearing the blue cockade, Sir John Chester. He held his hat an inch or two above his head, to propitiate the mob, and, resting gracefully on his cane, smiling pleasantly, and displaying his dress and person to the very best advantage, looked on in the most tranquil state imaginable. For all that, and quick and dexterous as he was, Gashford had seen him recognize Hugh with the air of a patron. He had no longer any eyes for the crowd, but fixed his keen regards upon Sir John. He stood in the same place and posture until the last man in the concourse had turned the corner of the street, then very deliberately took the blue cockade out of his hat, put it carefully in his pocket, ready for the next emergency, refreshed himself with a pinch of snuff, put up his box, and was walking slowly off, when a passing carriage stopped, and a lady's hand let down the glass. Sir John's hat was off again immediately. After a minute's conversation at the carriage window, in which it was apparent that he was vastly entertaining on the subject of the mob, he stepped lightly in, and was driven away. The secretary smiled, but he had other thoughts to dwell upon, and soon dismissed the topic. Dinner was brought him, but he sent it down untasted. And, in restless pacings up and down the room, and constant glances at the clock, and many futile efforts to sit down and read, or go to sleep, or look out of the window, consumed four weary hours. When the dial told him thus much time had crept away, he stole upstairs to the top of the house, and coming out upon the roof sat down, with his face towards the east. Heedless of the fresh air that blew upon his heated brow, of the pleasant meadows from which he turned, of the piles of roofs and chimneys upon which he looked, of the smoke and rising mist he vainly sought to pierce, of the shrill cries of children at their evening sports, the distant hum and turmoil of the town, the cheerful country breath that rustled past to meet it, and to droop and die, he watched and watched, till it was dark save for the specks of light that twinkled in the streets below and far away, and, as the darkness deepened, strained his gaze, and grew more eager yet. Nothing but gloom in that direction, still. Apostrophe, apostrophe, he muttered restlessly. Dog. Where is the redness in the sky you promised me? Apostrophe, apostrophe. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.